Hey guys, welcome back. BDC Care here. We're back with our weekly Q&A content. It's probably a video how you're watching it, but link in the description to access this on a lot of different podcasting platforms. Mm-hmm. Before we start today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out. I just watched the new Scott Pilgrim show. And you know, we both watched the movie and at least liked it a little bit, right? We're a big fan of Edgar Wright broadly. I think the movie was kind of visually really cool, and it's been long enough that I have a hard time sort of giving an honest review of how I felt about the story of it, right? But I remember sort of liking it, not loving it, and the show is really interesting and kind of cool.
Is Edgar Wright doing that too?
He's an executive producer on it.
Okay.
So he's not sort of
the creative head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was created for TV. By the original writer of the graphic novel,
O'Malley,
so the original Scott Pilgrim guy, and one other writer whose name I wasn't familiar with, but it's really interesting. I think it. I don't want to spoil anything, but what I will say is that it is in conversation with the other versions of itself, both the graphic novel, which my friends have read. And I have never read, and the movie apparently. So it's just very interesting as a piece of media. It surprised me in a couple different ways that I was a fan of, and I found it to be broadly, you know, pretty funny. I think the dialogue is good in a lot of places. I would say it's worth a watch if you felt neutral or better about any of the previous Scott Pilgrim stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. This is where I talk about the footage
in
the fight. So around the 13-minute mark, there's a weird fight and a bunch of weird stuff happens that doesn't seem like it should. And it sort of, it's topped off at the end by Jessica Cruz, Rebirth.
Yeah.
The second extra hit from her special two that does the bleeding damage with the sort of the buzzsaw that goes through the ground and attacks the opponent. It's doing it against a knocked out opponent, which I love. There's something really funny graphically when they're lying there unconscious and there's a buzzsaw going right through the middle of them.
Yeah, that's pretty silly.
And so that's about 13 minutes. If I'm doing this right, it's about 13 minutes in the footage. And I'm going to stick another one where it happened to hit. Because you have to get it perfectly. Because they have to be knocked out before the last hit. So I think usually the rocket. Yeah. So they have to be falling and landing. And then she still continues with her buzzsaw. Or maybe it's even the hit before the rocket. I haven't looked at it properly, but it's just, there's something that amuses me about it. I'm sure not everybody will find it as funny as I do, but I wanted to use that as a thumbnail even. But anyways, there's something just very, I'm surprised at actually how good Jessica Cruz is without having the crutch of that I usually rely on of having Hawkgirl being able to tag in and tag out really fast. Those extra hits at the end of her special two make it last so long that as long as they engage, right? So as long as it's not Arkham Knight Batgirl coming in to stop and interrupt her special two or something else, that as long as it engages, it's enough time to bypass the cool-out time. Like, it's longer than the cool-out time so that you can tag her in, do a special two, and then at the end of her special two, just tag her out. Maybe that's not entirely true. I might have to do a combo. But it feels like that's just as good. Like, when I need her out, I can take her out.
Yeah.
So anyways, good. Really good team. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on to the comments at record speed, it feels like.
It is. You normally ramble for a little bit longer.
10 minutes, man.
Yeah.
The first one comes from Johnny Martinez, 7717. And they say, hey, is there a way to predict the characters that come out in these challenges and the items or characters that come out in the online events? I need Flashpoint Deathstroke.
So Flashpoint Deathstroke is coming January 25th in the new year.
Yeah.
2024. In case you're listening to this at a time when it's not before 2024, January 25th. Yeah.
So the answer to that question is yes, but you need to collect all of that data and build it up and sort of track the cycle like we've been doing. And that is something that we hide. I forget, is this one thing that we posted for our patrons? Or
we have. The link is in the Patreon. And we still maintain the link as things happen. and we've got a bunch of information on that. So it's it starts from May 28th, 2020. We've got the sequence of, we've kept track of all of the characters in the challenge and the multiplayer reward. And we've also got predictions for the weeks coming, and we just highlight them as we get past them. So it's got, yeah, it's like any
years and years
of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of information. And we've got the predictions if the sequence goes up until at least May 2025. But it doesn't matter because the sequence is only 43 characters long for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, so if you're looking to get all this stuff, you don't need more than a couple years in advance.
So this just blew my mind. Are they both 43 prize sequences? They are. Right?
What do you mean? The challenge and the multiplayer reward?
Yeah. No. They both have 43 things in them.
That's not true.
Or one's 34. Never mind. One's 34. One's 43. I'm losing my mind. Right?
Yeah, they're different.
I must be losing my mind. Part of me was thinking, oh, it's just... No, but I remember we were talking about at one point how they would not overlap.
For years and years and years.
Yeah, so I got to fix the notes. The notes are not quite right for the numbers that we need to keep track of. Okay. All right, so that's a good point. I'm glad we sort of brought it up. I mean, this is one of the few features that our patrons on Patreon actually get. They get the recognition at the end, yes, but given the number of people who actually watch our videos, what they're really getting is our gratitude, and this is the only sort of material difference that they would have access to.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's information. It's useful. But they've probably been playing long enough that it doesn't even matter that much to them either.
Fingers crossed that they've got all the stuff that they want at this point in the game. Yeah. Anyways, that's a brisk comment. We're really motoring this week.
We are.
Next one comes from Mikey Loveland 9235. They say, another comment. You guys should make tier lists for bronze, silver, gold, and metal characters. You don't have to explain that much of why, because that would take forever. But I just don't know who to try and get. You could also try and do gears in a tier list, just a thought. So this is kind of just another... It is, I think, one of our most common comments for videos to make.
Right. I do want to point out, I think... So if we address this question for trying to answer it, instead of just talking about the sort of a meta-analysis of the question, if we look at the question, I don't think a tier list for bronze or silver matters.
Yeah. Because you're just buying the pack.
There's so few of those characters anyways. There's the rare chase characters, but none of them are good enough. Like we just say it right now. None of them are good enough to make worth putting any extra effort in getting. You get them as you get them with the, what do you call it? The rare drops in the packs, or you get them as you get them when they're rewards. I think Nightfall Bane is one of the chase characters, and you get them as a weekly, or sorry, daily login reward.
Yeah.
And so the gold becomes more interesting. And I think a lot of the tier lists that people make have a lot to do with how they play. I think we're actually doing something a little bit more than that, in a little bit more detail, because lots of people have come up with tier lists. And then that's the inevitable argument, because that question, have creating tier lists, almost requires everybody to be talking past each other about different things where they don't define what criteria they're using for why they rank one character ahead of another.
If you don't explain, that the information is almost useless, and if you do explain, then it takes forever.
Yeah. So, and when I say, and when you say forever, I mean forever is literally what we've been doing since November of last year.
Yeah.
Which is playing with all the challenge characters. If you want a tier list, you can just watch those videos and you can make your own based on, even if you have none of the characters, based on what we say about them. I guess so.
That's really sort of like sort of trying to divine something in the tea leaves, right? Is to figure out how good they are based off of sort of descriptions of them, and then trying to like objectively like rank them amongst each other. That would be hard, and it would also be a lot of content watching, but it's a lot faster than playing it. Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is that nobody has played all of the characters enough to really know, right?
Right.
Because I think our tier list has changed since going through that, right?
Right, right.
So it's kind of not like fake entirely, but it is in a little, in one way, almost kind of fake, right? Because you have to pick arbitrarily at some point when you've played enough and you're basing sort of your opinions of characters based off of not really having a lot of experience with them, you kind of write them off really fast, right?
Sure.
And we've done that a bunch. And so part of it is that our tier list could only be the guys that we play with a lot. So it would only be the people that we think are really good. And
But that's why I think it's important that we talk about since last year, November, because since last November, I think what's been eye-opening has been forcing ourselves to play with the characters that come in each challenge.
Yeah.
And then you really see more than just the first impression you get looking at their abilities, because then there's just nuances to playing them that are really interesting. I think this is part of the problem, though, right? Like, if you were to get a bunch of different guys to talk about Injustice and make a tier list, they'd come at it from different perspectives. They'd be using different criteria.
And that has been happening.
And so that's why, I mean, if you're going to talk about who's the most important characters, I say Rebirth Raven. I've said this very recently. Rebirth Raven, Hawkgirl Prime, and Redliner Hal Jordan are probably the three best characters to set up a team where you can just slot in any other character and make that other character shine and make it really fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other strategies, right? Like, not everybody makes the same kind of teams that we do. There's people that do an unbalanced team.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need a character that's going to be really good on their own with two sort of meat sacks.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the part of the sort of beauty of it is that the best characters are almost always just the ones that you have, right? You play them, you learn what you like about them. Every once in a while you get one that doesn't feel very good, right?
Yeah.
But most of the time, the way that you learn it is how they drip feed it to you. So you're just buying the packs, or earning the challenge characters, and then figuring it out for yourself. Because buying people from the store is almost never worth it. So the people that you should always be working on are the people that you get. By the time you've got everybody, you've kind of figured it out. So
one qualification I'll say is that early on, it's not quite that way. Like, early on, you're buying bronzes and silvers.
Yeah.
Then it does matter. It's because I love playing with Flash.
Yeah.
Regime Flash was so much fun to play with. He had really quick basics. He had the speed boost.
Yeah, they're cheap enough that if you're really grinding in the early game, then it does make sense sometimes for you to buy, like, the specific type of character that you like playing, especially if there's a bronze equivalent and you really like their sort of speed or rhythm, then buying the silver version of that is sometimes worth it.
Right. And then you promote them directly. So, and I feel like that's the other thing with the gears too. It's probably harder for us to come up with a recommendation. I mean, I have some general principles about non-max gears that are really good, you know, like Demon Blade and the lower level and lower power basic damage boost, crit chance boost on basic hits. Those are really good early on when you do not have Tantu Totem or Master's Death Cart to really leverage the specials the same way. Those are great gears. But again, it's a grind. It's a marathon.
Yeah.
You'll learn. See, so this is the funny thing, right? We see this among the hackers where, because they haven't been getting stuff as it comes and they have it all at once, it's very common that you're going to see a team with that look either like they are probably hackers or definitely hackers, and they have a really bad team composition.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I'll apologize to the smaller people that I'm going to lump in who are not cheaters, who go into the forums and ask, I've got all this, and they have everything. How do I set up a team?
Yeah.
It just boggles my mind that somebody could have put in the hours to accumulate that team.
Just by sort of bashing their head into a wall over and over again until they break through.
Right, doing nothing. Like, without any sense of which characters are good or what the play's been like. And those, I mean, I'm sure they're playing, but I feel like they don't have a real appreciation of the game the same way.
Yeah.
And I guess not everybody needs to put in the hours. It's not like one of those true Scotsman kind of arguments where you're not a real fan unless you have done this many hours of play. But I mean, really what it does is it separates some of the people who've not really been playing legitimately. Yeah, and it's okay. I mean, you know, people cheat. I get that. But you would answer your own questions if you just play.
Mm-hmm. Well, with all these caveats, we maybe do eventually need to make a tier list.
That's
give
true.
The people what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Gustafson, 6164, has a question, and it starts out with, "Would you guess? I would really enjoy a tier list made by you guys. I also had a question. What are your thoughts on characters whose special 2 gets ended early when the opponent blocks, and how do you suggest using them so that you get the most out of their special 2? The characters I can think of are Black as Night Flash, New 52 Black Adam, and Dawn of Justice Wonder Woman. I'm sure there are more. Thanks for your videos."
Yeah, I actually kind of like that. To me, what it does is, instead of the usual, what does blocking special do? It reduces damage by 50%, I think, right? One of them, basics is 25 and specials are 50, or it's the other way around, whatever.
Yeah, it's either 50 or 25, and then it can be boosted with gear. It's so hard. I just know that it's kind of, like, mediocre.
Right. So, to me, what I feel like it does is that it changes the balance a little bit, so it gives you... I don't think of it so much as...
Oh, I think its specials is 25, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because I remember being like, oh, it almost doesn't make sense to block specials
really? Anymore. Okay,
yeah, because that's what I feel. I don't know.
I can't remember. I think... But what it really does, whatever the actual number is,
yeah.
What I feel like it does is it rebalances the... So, if you're in a fight against somebody who's really high stat...
Yeah.
That your blocking just does more blocking.
Yeah.
I think the real harm is that you don't get the last hit, which is where the gear effects happen, if it's going to happen for a special. Mm-hmm. So unless you're using Master's Death card as a second tag in, most of the time what happens is that if you don't finish your special too.
It is basic attacks by 25% and specials by 50.
Oh, so I was right.
Incorrect. I've swapped it in my head. Yeah.
Okay. So it's... I like that, actually. So it really prioritizes it. So your priority, really, when you're doing a special, is to try to get it unblocked.
Yeah.
Which is always the case anyways. So it favors a little bit of skill. Not skill. Just... maybe it is skill. Because skill is something you can practice, not talent. So it's the skill of timing it right and figure out where the... frame is when the opponent is just about ready to attack you and release their block.
Yeah. Or what you can do sometimes is do sort of part of a attack combo, depending on the character, right? And then break into a special right after it.
Right.
And so there's kind of different ways. One of them is literally just sort of timing and learning the rhythm.
Yeah.
And then the other one is still learning something, but it's a little bit of sort of experimentation where you go, oh, if I only use one swipe out of my swipe combo and then hit a special right away, I can do it consistently, right? Oftentimes, there is some sort of spot in one of their animations that you can do that.
So here's a tip. So the one place where that doesn't work is where the opponent has power. Because if the opponent has power...
That's true.
Then you can't actually, you just have to let it out because otherwise they're going to be doing the same to you.
Yeah.
And unless you're willing to block and eat their special, you're not going to have a lot of success trying to time it to have your special unblocked.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting question because I think, I guess the strategy then is really planning around what to do when the opponent... It changes the question, right? The question isn't, what do you do about special twos that when they're blocked, you lose the last few hits? It becomes, how do you handle an opponent that has power when you tag in or when they tag in?
Yeah.
That's the question, actually. Because when they don't have power, you're really just timing it. That's the answer. And if they do have power, then you've got to find a workaround where are you able to eat the special? Are you willing to do your special and not lose it? Or do you switch from special 2 or special 1, depending on who you've got and what gear you've got on?
Yeah.
So it's interesting, because it's a different question for me, right? Because I guess we've played it so much, and part of it is adjusting to what the situation is.
Yeah, I guess the real answer is that you need to have an answer to that question, right? Of what are you going to do if they have power? And you need to know what your answer is going to be and be ready to sort of use it. Because there's no one sort of perfect way, but... having a plan that you can execute relatively consistently, whether that's having somebody that you can block with or whatever else.
Yeah. Well, that's why, all right, so that's why Rebirth Raven is so good. Her with Hawkgirl basically means your answer is tag in Rebirth Raven.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to point out, again, another thing just occurs to me. If you're watching these Jessica Cruz fights, what you may or may not realize is the only thing stopping Jessica Cruz is Astral Harness. That is the only thing that makes these fights harder. Her special does so much damage. It does so many hits. It does so much. And the amount, or what's ridiculous is, I mean, there should be a Blackest Night Flash fight, team fight in here, is that the damage over time, the bleed damage at the end, does so little damage, which normally would be a bad thing, but it means against the Blackest Night Flash team, it's not hurting you. And all it does, it boosts the damage you're going to do with the next hit.
Mm-hmm.
So from a practical point of view, if it weren't for Astro Harness, I think this Jessica Cruz team would be the ultimate team that could handle basically anybody until you, unless you're, say, playing Survivor and the team, the opponent's got so much more of a health pool that your special two isn't going to knock them out.
Yeah.
This is an amazing team. I don't think I ever appreciate Jessica Cruz quite as much as I did, because I think when I started playing with her, there was also Astro Harness. But when we were fighting a team without Astro Harness,
yeah,
the fact that she can actually, no lie, on an equivalent power team,
yeah,
knock them all out with one special two if they happen not to block when the two opponents tag in. She does literally that much damage on a team of equivalent health.
Okay, very cool. Is that our answer to that question?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've sort of tried to answer it directly.
Yeah.
But it's a different question for us.
Yeah. Now, yeah. I actually realized I do have one other thing I want to talk about that's not question related. So I'm going to do the rare sort of mid-break to talk about something really cool. Which is, I also have just started playing a game, and it's a very small game. So, like, I say started, I think I'm more than halfway through already, called Unpacking.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really, really cool. It's super simple. The whole premise of the game is all you do is you get set up with different scenes and then you unpack. And what that means is that you open boxes, you take items out of the boxes, and you have to pick where to put them.
Yeah.
And it's these little pixel art rooms, and you start out just in sort of a bedroom. And then as you go through, you go into sort of, there's a button you can click to open sort of the floor plan of the house and swap between different rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And it, all you do is rotate and place items in a space and then like move items. And from those really simple mechanics, they end up making a like beautiful wordless narrative. You get one sentence per level. There's 8 levels. And the sentence is, when you're done the level, you have a picture of the room in a scrapbook. And then it says like one sentence about sort of that stage in your life.
Mm.
And what's really, really cool about it is how effectively it does storytelling. And it uses really sort of simple rules. Once you've placed everything, it will tell you a handful of items if they're in the wrong spot. And so it has this flexible system where there's a bunch of different places you can put something. So if you have a toothbrush, for example, you can put it, you know, on the bathroom counter or in a cup on the counter or wherever else. But if you put the toothpaste like on top of the toilet, it'll tell you it's wrong. Or if you put your toothpaste in your bedroom, it's wrong. And from these,
what if you put the poop knife anywhere but on the floor?
Oh god!
Then you're gonna.
Well, the poop knife actually goes up on a hook in the laundry room, apparently, according to the original story. Yeah. No, but it creates these really incredible, beautiful moments, because as you're unpacking, it's the stuff that you keep and change as you move from space to space. So it's the elements of your life that sort of stay with you and don't. So, you know, like, I'll try to give the least spoilers possible, but like, you start out in your childhood room with a bunch of like toys and stuffed animals, right? So seeing the stuff that is important enough to you that it makes it to the next thing, and you can see, oh, this is a souvenir, so clearly, you know, you've been to this country at some point.
Right.
And then there's, I'm going to spoil like a little bit of one level, but in a really sort of minor way, but there's one level where you're clearly moving in with a partner. And the way that they express that is that there's already a bunch of stuff in the house and you can move their stuff. But you have to sort of navigate how your life and how your stuff fits in with theirs. And so you get this really cool, like, moving into somebody else's space, navigating sort of how you have two of the same thing sometimes, how your stuff kind of clashes and trying to make things fit in. And there's like a beautiful transcendent moment where you have your diploma and you take it out
And I was moving it around room to room to room. And I go, oh my God, there's no space on any of these walls for the diploma. And the solution to them is you have to slide it under the bed. And so it's this beautiful moment of you don't entirely fit in this person's life and space. Oh, wow. And so your diploma has to go under the bed. And I had to play that, right? I was like, okay, well, the wall here, no, there's a poster there. What about in the kitchen? Oh, there's not really any wall space on the kitchen. What about the bathroom? Mm. Oh, well, there's this big painting already in the bathroom that looks like it was bought from like a Home Goods or whatever. And it doesn't look that nice, but I can't move it. It looks like maybe it's nailed to the wall or something. I'm like, oh, man. And I'm like, under the bed? And the thing is, because it lets you end the level, you know that that's where it's supposed to go. Like, right. That's one of the spots that is the valid place for it. Right. So it's a little moment like that, which is surprisingly poignant and cool, and it can't... Mm. It only works because it's a video game, right? Because it's the embodied emotion of you, you know, looking for anywhere to display your stuff, looking for a place for you to sort of have your space, and to realize that there's no space for you in that house. And it's like kind of like gut-wrenching, just like a little bit. Yeah. Right, it's not like super massively emotional, but it's a really effective moment. And so
it feels real, like, yeah, it doesn't always have to have huge stakes to have something be meaningful.
Yeah.
And it's almost, to me, that's the kind of thing that you can only do in a mature environment of video games. Yeah. Like, if you did it right, the beginning of all video games,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't be so effective. But I think because we've got this long history of video games being about really important stuff, when it does the kind of everyday stuff again, mm-hmm. it hits a little differently, right?
And there's a ton of little moments. So I'll do one other tiny thing, which is the next place after that person's apartment is you move back into your childhood bedroom, and there's a sewing machine on your desk. Oh, it's been converted to a sewing room.
Right.
And you have a cork board where you can put up all these pictures. And there's a picture of me and like you and your partner.
Right.
And I put it up without thinking about it. I said me, right? Because I'm the person doing it. So like it really puts you in it. So I put all of my photos up on the cork board. And then I realized that when I was done with the level, one of the only things I had misplaced was a picture of you and your partner on the cork board. And you have to put it away in a closet. Like, you don't want to see it. You don't want it out. Right. So it's wrong out and displayed. And there's it's those little moments of, oh,
that's the story. That's what's happening. Oh my
God. That, and
that's why you're back.
It is so, but whatever. It's the way that it is wordless and effective and immersive and deep, but and it's this really simple sort of almost cozy game, right? Where there's no real lose state. There's a lot of sort of theoretical creativity of like, oh, how do you want to display your stuff on the shelf? What shelf does this go on? Where are your books? Where is this? You know, what's more important to you? Your sort of music or your art supplies or, you know, all these like little things. And so you kind of get to build your characterization of this person based off of a really small set of rules. And I am so impressed by how well they have managed to pull it off. And I think most people could play the game. It's cool. I mean, you should honestly give it a try. I should sit you down in front of it, because you only need like, you know, you don't have to play through the whole game if you don't want to.
Right.
But you only need like sort of 20 minutes to really get what it's about.
Right.
And on a really basic level, sort of what it does.
It sounds pretty good. My problem now is I've been playing Word Blitz a lot.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it's a time sink.
Mm.
I just, I mean, not that... Anyways, there's just, it does sound pretty good. It does sound like the kind of game that I would like.
It's very cool. Yeah. So no, I was just, I think it's definitely worth a shout out, because I'm deeply impressed by what it manages to be a lot more than the sum of its parts, and take an idea that I thought would be kind of just okay and really polish it until it shines, which is cool.
Right.
It's always impressive.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be something new. It can be. Being something new is helpful, but sometimes even if it's something that you are familiar with, or theoretically, it's just an old idea.
Yeah.
It's done really well.
Yeah, because I mean, video games about fitting stuff into a space, Tetris, right? Like, that's some of the earliest, one of the first massive video games.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. This is probably a good point to actually end it off.
Yeah.
This is taking us right till the end. So, just to finish off here, we'd like to give a huge thank you to all of our lovely supporters on Patreon. That is Michael DeVries, Irvin Ruiz, and Hoshi127 supporting us on the credit level, and the names scrolling past you now who have supported us at some point during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for your support. Thanks so much to all of you for watching or listening if you're on one of the podcast platforms.
Right.
We'll see you next time.
Komoda.